Thinking Too Hard About Anime, an episode-by-episode discussion of a beloved animated series. It's a little bit of history, a little bit of analysis, and a lot of over-examining the Japanese cartoons we love so much. I am your co-host, Noah Carden, and joining me, as always, is...
Aaron J. Shelton.
And this week, this is it, folks. It is sessions 25 and 26, The Real Folk Blues, Parts 1 and 2.
The synopsis for this episode is that Vicious begins and also ends his coup of the Red Dragons, which puts both Spike and Julia in the crosshairs of the Syndicate. This causes Spike and Julia to have a fateful reunion, and then Spike says, fuck it. And that's pretty much it. It's sort of Spike's farewell, set to the backdrop of a organized crime upheaval.
So these episodes were both written by Keiko Nobumoto, but part one was directed by Ikuro Sato, and part two was directed by Yoshiyuki Takei. The title, The Real Folk Blues, actually comes from a series of blues albums released from 1965 to 1967 by Chess Records, and then later reissued by MCA Records. They include artists like John Lee Hooker, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, and Sonny Boy Williamson II. And were sort of a reaction to increasing audience for blues after the British invasion. I believe they're actually available as single disc compilations now.
I mean, this seems appropriate because this episode is sort of a compilation of things we've seen.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is it. What did you think?
So I did remember my stance on like Balin for Fallen Angels and just Spike's, I'm not going to say arc, but his backstory before. And I still stand by that statement. I think it's the least interesting for me. And I have kind of a theory. I think I know why that is for me personally. I don't know if you want me to get into that now or...
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't relate to Spike anymore, if ever. So throughout these two episodes, it's, again, like we saw in Ballad of Fallen Angels, we have Spike's past coming to get him, this time forcibly so. He reunites with Julia. Oh, yeah, spoilers, by the way, for all of this. Because Julia dies, he sort of goes into this death spiral. And that behavior is no longer cool to me. And it's horrible to see. But at the same time, I'm not like, no, Spike, don't go. It's like, this is your sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that you've created for yourself. Where it's like, this is kind of the only way this whole thing is going to end, but it feels very stupid and stupid is a very harsh word, but like futile.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
Well, at the same time, again, like from technical standpoint and just like directorial animation wise, some of the stuff we get from like Jet and Faye, it's like super good. You know?
Yeah, like the animation, obviously, as always, is top-notch. It's definitely some of the best in the series. So in part two, the primary animation director is Toshihiro Kawamoto, who is the character designer and overall, like, visual lead on the series. We see very, very on-model, very, very detailed versions of the characters, like, as typically it happens whenever he is in charge, because obviously it's, you know, he's the guy who made everybody look how they look. He's going to make sure that when they are animated, they are animated to like the top quality, which, not to say there's any real low quality in the series, but there's there's definitely like some ups and downs a little bit. Like, you know, it goes from like, you know, on a 10-point scale, it goes from like an 8 to a 9 to a 10 kind of thing, like up and down a little bit. But yeah, so he's actually like in charge of the second half of the the episode. And yeah, I mean, we get to see like a clearer timeline of Spike's past life, I guess. We kind of figure out like what the story actually is between Spike, Julia, and Vicious. And then, yeah, I do think that you're definitely not wrong in that Spike's plan at the end is ultimately futile in a way, but it's also, I don't know if it could have ended any other way. Like, I can't see Spike just leaving, just going with like Faye and Jet back onto the Bebop and leaving and just never coming back. I don't think I could see him doing that. I think he gets reunited with the woman that he loves and then she dies and there's nothing else he can do other than, I don't even know if I would call it revenge in a way. I think it's, yeah, I guess it would be, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels like this is just something that he has to do now. Like, he doesn't have anything else, really, that stopping Vicious from whatever Vicious is actually doing, because Vicious wants to take over the Red Dragon Syndicate, but we don't know how different that would really be for anything. Obviously, Vicious is a much more violent and ruthless kind of person than the original, the Van, the original heads of the Red Dragon. But, I mean, is it going to be like some big end of Mars or, you know, bloodshed on the street kind of thing? Because there always seems to be a pretty decent amount of that. And, yeah, I'm not really sure what the goal was other than to just kind of stop Vicious from destroying everything.
This just came to me.
Okay.
I think after Julia dies, because that was kind of sort of the plan,
mm-hmm.
For him and Julia to finally escape. I think once Julia died, I think Spike might have realized, oh, aside from the self-destruction thing, I think he might have realized, oh, Vicious is going to keep coming at me mm-hmm. until I'm dead. Which means he's going to keep coming after the Bebop.
Okay.
So I need to finish this. That, and again, it's not clearly expressed.
Yeah,
within the show, I think he doesn't give a good reason. He doesn't give like a great reason. I think I would think it's in both versions where it's something along the lines of, I'm not going there to die. I'm going there to see if I'm still alive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was alive and not awake.
Yeah, because the start of part one, like, Jet gets shot in the leg, and it's probably like the most serious, like, any of their injuries has been treated, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Spike gets, you know, shot and blown up in Battle of Fallen Angels, but the end of the episode, he's just sort of wrapped up like a mummy and makes like a dumb joke about Faye singing off key, and it's slapstick hijinks at the end of the episode. But Jet getting shot through the leg, like, they actually have to go to the doctor from, this is also sort of like a best hits of characters too.
Yeah.
They go to the doctor on Mars who had Ein in his lab, and they go to him to get Jet's leg fixed up. And then for like the rest of the episodes, it's Jet is walking around with like a bandaged leg with a cane, and then kind of talking about the best hits. Like, we get to see the doctor, we get to see, was it Bill? Who is, no, Bob. Bob, who was Jet's ISSP contact. We see Anastasia once again, and we actually get to see what happened to Punch and Judy. There's a little denouement on mm-hmm. on that whole thing, which I thought was very good.
We see Laughing Bull.
Yes.
As Jet is the one to consult him this
yes.
time.
I forget, what did...
We don't see the three old men, though.
We don't. I think one of them actually died in brain scratch. If I remember correctly, I think they appear in like one of the TV portions very briefly. but I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, right. Like going back to the original point. Yeah, like this is one of the most serious times we've seen somebody injured in the show. And like you said, Spike says that he's going there to see if he's alive. He talks about his eyes, how they're two different colors, and that one of them always sees the present, one of them always sees the past, and that because of that, he's never quite sure if he's actually here. He's always feels like he's in some sort of dreamlike state to a degree. And yeah, I think he's doing his best to protect the Bebop, protect his friends after Julia is gone, but also have some sort of reckoning with Vicious.
I tend not to read like any thinky pieces on Cowboy Bebop for the show. But I did a little digging on this, and I think you bring up something that's in relation to it. This is from dotandline.net, the article, and hopefully I should remember to link to this in the show notes. But the article is called Why Spike Raced Toward Death and the End of Cowboy Bebop. And in the article, it talks about Spike having that sort of philosophy being what is called sprezzatura. Thank you, Google pronunciation. But it's an Italian word. And I believe it started out as a fashion, as like a 16th century fashion movement, but like sort of idea, way of thinking. But in more modern thinking, it comes to mean studied carelessness, aloofness, sort of the disheveled look, which Spike definitely has. And they use this term to describe Spike not only in the way he looks, but also the way he acts. He's constantly aloof. He's not trying too hard. And that's kind of his armor. That's sort of what keeps him alive and keeps him going. And in the article, they talk about how when Julia dies, that's definitely shattered. And I feel like we talked about this a little bit in Ballad of Fallen Angels. But again, this is just sort of a rehash of Ballad of Fallen Angels. But now Julia's here. But I think, like you said, where Jet gets a serious injury that we don't normally see in the show, I think it's also the show losing its aloofness.
Okay.
Like both show, and again, this is right now me thinking about this. as is our want. I think both Spike the character and the show lose some of the coolness about them in these two episodes. And I think that's also part of the reason why I'm not as heavy onto it. In Hard Luck Woman, it still kept it, you know? I don't know how else to describe it. So it's like, no, that was still kind of Cowboy Bebop, where this is like, it's weird. You know, it's a weird sort of looking glass way of looking at these characters in the show. Because the show is losing. Yeah, because you have to care now.
It's, you know, people get hurt. There's a much more sort of serious, real tone to the whole thing. It's very much like it goes into that heroic bloodshed sort of aspect of the series, or at least as far as Ballad of Fallen Angels, because like you said, it's kind of Ballad of Fallen Angels again, but a little bit bigger. Like a lot of the big fight scene at the end of part two is there's definitely like an echo of Ballad of Fallen Angels in like the way that the combat goes down, but it becomes a much more serious sort of episode. There's a lot more drama going on. Like Faye and Spike get into it. We see Faye confront Spike about Julia, about going off to die, basically, about going off to face Vicious. And, you know, Faye says that, you know, she doesn't have anywhere else to go back to now. Like, this is her home, that this is, you know, this is basically where she belongs. And now Spike is leaving that, And it's, you know, it, she breaks down crying after, you know, after kind of doing the dramatic shoot in the air.
Well, yelling, kind of thing.
Yeah, she doesn't go, but she definitely damages the inside of the Bebop. Like, everybody kind of has their moment with Spike, but it's not a whiz-bang fun kind of episode. It's not, you know, it's very deadly serious for most of it. I think the one sort of, like, humorous moment we get is the scene with Punch in the airport. Like, that's probably the most kind of, like, humorous moment.
And even that's still very, whoop, I'm picking up my mother from the airport because my life has changed.
Yes, yeah.
And she's going to live with me now, even though I'm unemployed. And even though I'm an unemployed actor.
Yes, an unemployed actor. And, like, his mother is talking about how, like, she's been abandoned and all this. But, yeah, like, that is probably, like, the one sort of, like, light moment. And then after that, it's either, like, action or drama throughout the episodes.
I feel like we called this. I feel like we called this in the Ballad of Fallen Angels episode. Because if we didn't have that, this would hit harder for me, I think.
Yeah.
And I feel like they could have slow burned it a little more, like, pepper it into an episode here and there. That would be sort of antithetical to the show of being these contained episodic little movies.
Right.
But just not as, Yeah, I think that's it, man. I think it's just, we got Ballad of Fallen Angels, and so we kind of saw this before, and then we didn't bring it up again for like 20 more episodes.
Yeah. It's a very long amount of time between Battle of Fallen Angels and then Jupiter Jazz have been fairly close to each other. Like, Jupiter Jazz is sort of the halfway point mm-hmm. of the series. And then we don't really get anything with the sort of Spike, Vicious, Julia plot line between the end of Jupiter Jazz and this. Like, I wonder how this could have gone if we had had, like, another, like, single episode Spike Vicious episode as sort of like a 3/4 point in the series.
Yeah, we needed one less episode or one more episode. There's something not quite making it all fit as a whole series as far as the Spike Vicious Julia storyline.
So would you like to hear the synopsis for the prototype?
Yes.
Okay. So it is Shooting Star Bebop Part 1 and Part 2, which Shooting Star Bebop was actually one of the original titles for the series. I think I mentioned that way back.
A year ago,
yes. So, 25, Shooting Star Bebop, Part 1. The secret of Spike's artificial eye, the past and the present overlap. Vicious murders the Red Dragon Elders and becomes the boss. Spike and crew receive bounties on their head. Spike finally reunites with Julia, but she points a gun at him. So, that's pretty spot on.
Pretty spot on.
Shooting Star Bebop, Part 2. The continuation. Without telling anyone, Spike launches an attack on Red Dragon. Faye's wavering heart, the final confrontation with Vicious. Spike defeats Vicious, but he too is wounded, and he ends up collapsing. And then?
The end, question mark?
Question mark?
I mean, that, at least he's consistent, because there's, I'll bring this up now, because we don't technically know the fate of Spike. He collapses on the steps after his last encounter with Vicious, again, still very iconic, pointing the finger at the screen, going bang, then collapsing. And this is from Shinichiro Watanabe. This is what he said at some interview, at some red carpet event at the London Comic Con in 2013. He says, I've never actually said whether he is alive or dead in the final scene. That's up to the person watching to decide. I think that people who watch that and think that Spike is asleep are probably right. Just sleeping. So again, like, at least he's sticking. It's not like, oh, I forget. He's not pulling a Toriyama. He, from the beginning, he wanted that big old question mark.
Yeah, I think in a lot of anime, not just Cowboy Bebop, but a lot of series tend to end. It feels weird to say they don't end not definitively, but a lot of times it feels like there is sort of an openness at the end of a series.
Anime has bad endings. I'll say it.
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of times there are, I don't know if, it feels like there's always an option to continue the story if they want it to, but it doesn't, how do I want to say this? A lot of anime doesn't seem definitive in its endings. It always feels like there's always room for more. Whether or not there actually is more or not, it typically feels like at the end of a series, it's either they go off and live the rest of their lives, or they go off into whatever the next series is. And I think with Cowboy Bebop and with like Watanabe's comments and with like the sort of outline that I just read, it feels like that, yeah, if I wanted to, or if, you know, Sunrise and Bandai wanted to pay us, we could totally do more Cowboy Bebop. But at the same time, the way that this ends, it could totally just be a definitive ending. Spike's dead, but he's at peace in a way, and that's it. Or, oh, Faye and Jet show up, and they take him back, and they wrap him up like a mummy, and it's all well and good. And they go off to have more adventures.
Yeah, you're really pushing for that mummy ending.
Yeah, stay. Always a fan of a mummy. Yeah, so I could definitely see it going either way. I mean, if you want to get into it, I personally think he's dead. Like, I think with the way that it ends.
He becomes a star.
Yeah.
Like Laughing Bull said, we pan up, we go to a star, it's twinkling, that's Spike.
Yes, and then it fades away. And okay, like, that's the whole thing. That's exactly what Laughing Bull said. That's it. He was woken up from his dream, which I want to say, I didn't actually look any of this up, so I am probably very wrong, but I know there's I believe it's a very Buddhist, or especially very Japanese Buddhist sort of philosophy, that life is sort of a waking dream, that whatever comes with death is waking up from that. And I feel like that is very much kind of in Spike's whole personality and character, that sort of aloofness and that constant talk about being not sure if he's awake or dreaming throughout the series, kind of falls into that philosophy. And but yeah, like I think Spike is gone. I think that's it for the series. That's my take on it.
Yeah, he's got it. Story-wise, he's just got to be dead.
Yeah. Like, what else are you going to do with that?
I don't want any more.
Yeah. I definitely think you could do more in, like, the Cowboy Bebop universe, quote-unquote. Like, there's plenty of stuff going on. And, you know, I haven't seen Carol on Tuesday, but the fact that they live in a city that is mentioned in Cowboy Bebop makes it feel like it could potentially be in the same world, but I haven't actually watched it, so I have no idea. And I figured people will probably be ranting and raving if it actually was connected directly, but...
They're on Mars.
Mm-hmm. They're on Mars and they're in Alba City.
They use Wulongs. If it did take place in the Cowboy Bebop universe,
mm-hmm.
Supposedly they are 50 years since humanity migrated to Mars, which would put them roughly around 2071. So parallel. It could be, it could be Walking Dead comics, Walking Dead TV show.
Yeah.
Situation. Or it's just, I don't know, it's the same director, man. He likes certain things.
Yeah, like, you know, that kind of stuff happens all the time in, like, anime and manga. Like, little little references and winks and nods to stuff that they've previously created. I mean, how many times has Arale shown up in Dragon Ball? Yeah, come on.
It's like, I already made up a unit of currency. Why would I make up another one?
I think we talked about it in the episode, but the fridge from whatchamacallit, Toys in the Attic,
mm-hmm.
shows up in Space Dandy, and Wulong show up there too. So
yeah, Space Dandy the same.
Space Dandy is a much more like crazy, like
they're out in the galaxy, smackety
do sort of multiple,
I'd say thousands of alien races.
Yes, but yeah. Anyway, I could definitely see them doing more in the Cowboy Bebop universe, but I don't need more with the Bebop crew.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you have anything about Shinolin? Because I've got a question I want to pose.
No, aside the fact that they were brothers, less they didn't want to do an entirely new character design.
Yes. Okay. So a character that is introduced in this episode is Shin, who is Lin from Jupiter Jazz. Is Lin's brother. And does it not feel like Shin is like the protagonist of his own anime that just kind of showed up?
Yeah, because he comes in to save the day twice.
Yeah. Like, he shows up to rescue Jet and Spike, and then he shows up during the big shootout at the end to, like, back up Spike. But from his character design to the way he's sort of treated, it really feels like there is some, like, secret anime or manga that is just all about Shin and, like, the stuff he's doing. I know we've gotten some characters that have been introduced in the show that are like, oh, Spike knows this person from being in the Red Dragon, like Anastasia or Mao Yenrai, but feels like Spike is much more familiar with Lin when he shows up in Jupiter Jazz. But then Shin shows up in this episode and Spike's like, oh yeah, you were there too. And you're totally not just the same character, but not dead this time.
I don't know if you ever watched Beer Fest from the yes. makers of Super Troopers.
Yep.
It's such a good, God, it's so fucking funny. The bit they do. There's a character in there who dies. And then you think that character suddenly comes back and they're like, hey, I'm this character's twin brother. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know he's been training to do this beer festival, this beer championship, but I've also been training in secret too. Also, you can just call me by that character's name so there's no confusion. And then they move on with the plot. It's like it's so genius because they get the, you know, they get to have their cake and eat it too.
Yes. Like, he shows up in a cowboy hat that he immediately takes off and has never seen wearing.
And yeah, it's kind of, it's like, oh, we need this character. Brother. Done.
Oh, man.
My favorite thing from that scene, though, is Jet and Spike are at a bar. A shootout occurs because the Red Dragon are after them. There is an explosion so hard that it shoots the silverware drawers out of the bar. It's such a good shot. It's
mm-hmm.
and such good, like, just very show-off animation without you realizing how much they're showing off.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of forgot to talk about it in our coverage of the movie, but the opening scene in the convenience store is mind-blowing because there are shots, there's like reference documents about like how all the aisles are set up and what all the products on the shelves are and like how they are able to keep it all uniform throughout that entire scene. It's mind-blowing. And yeah, like, stuff like this, where, like, all the, like, the silverware gets knocked out, all the glass and bottles and all that stuff. It's, yeah, it's crazy how they're able to keep track of all that kind of stuff and think of things along those lines to really show the impact and destruction that's going on.
Yeah, they're just, yeah, a lot of particle effects. A lot of doves. Again, they, much like Ballad of Fallen Angels, they're kind of in the John Woo-averse.
Yeah. Oh, no!
Okay.
So Shin, in English, is voiced by Kirk Bailey, who is probably best known for his role as Kevin Ugg Lee in the Nickelodeon sitcom Salute Your Shorts.
Oh! The camp counselor?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. That's just for us.
Yep.
That's a little treat for me and you.
Oh, man. Yeah, wow. I did not expect that. I'm looking at, he's done some stuff. Antrika Kiter, Cowboy Bebop, Ghost in the Shell, Mobile Suit Gundam, Trigun. Oh, he was Millions in Trigun. So he's the ultimate bad guy there.
Good on him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's no Donkey Lips or Budnick.
Yeah. Sponge.
Because if you squeeze him, the knowledge just comes out.
That's...
Yeah, good on him for being an anim... Looks like having a nice animation career.
Yeah.
So I have a few more little tidbits about the episode.
Okay.
Part two apparently has the least number of music cues of any episode in the series. So part two has a cold open. We're right where we left off with Julie and Spike in the graveyard, and you hear Memory, the little music box song. And then other than that, there is no music in the first half of that episode. They don't do the opening titles either. There's no... oh my God, why did I forget the name?
Tank.
Yeah, we don't hear Tank. So again, I think another thing that sort of makes this weird as a final episode. We don't get a See You Space Cowboy, for there are no Space Cowboys left. We do get the final title card that says, "You're going to carry that weight," which has been used and memed and, you know, from here all over creation. I did not know this at first. Apparently, it is a reference to the song Carry That Weight. It was the 15th track on the Beatles album Abbey Road, and apparently was written to tell their fans that the Beatles had broken up. But yeah, and it was part of the final suite of the last album they ever made as a group.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's definitely appropriate for the end of the series. It's, you know, the end of the Beatles, the end of the show.
I mean, I think culturally, same amount of significance.
So yeah, so like Carry That Weight and Bang are used like a whole lot cross media post Cowboy Bebop. Like obviously there's plenty of like little memes and references here and there, but Bang is actually used by Tom, the host of Toonami, who is also voiced by Steve Bloom, the first time that Toonami was canceled, I guess. It's Toonami went off the air for a while, and the final message you get from Tom, he's talking about like all the good times we have, and they flies off into the sunset, and then you hear him say "bang" as just like a little nod to Cowboy Bebop, and you know the fact that they share the same voice actor. It's had a long lasting effect, especially in the sort of animation and anime world.
Steve Bloom has the waveform tattooed on his forearm. It's big. I don't want to get into this quite yet because I am looking at Tom's farewell, the end of Toonami, and remembering that they did do a redesign of him where he had eyes, and I hate it.
Yeah, that version of Tom is not very good, if I'm being honest, but yes, still.
Hold on. I gots to hear it. Okay, he just said stay gold. Oh, you dirty dog! That's okay. So you heard my live reaction. Maybe I'll cut some of it out. Maybe I'll put that audio in. Probably I don't even know how I'd match that up. So probably not. But so I listened to that. And that's the thing, dude. I got chills when he said bank after talking about how I'm not as connected to these two episodes.
Yeah.
As I want to be. But that bang is still, it's so good. It's so perfect.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to feel connected with Spike and these episodes just because, like, you know, I don't think I've ever had to go on a suicidal, like, mission of vengeance to protect my friends or anything. And, you know, I've never been in such a violent situation as what happens in these episodes. But, you know, these are characters we've spent 26 episodes in a movie with, and seeing the end of their story and seeing the end of Spike, and, you know, it still kind of gets you. And that, yeah, that bang is iconic.
Yeah. Two things on that. I will say again, I think it shows some growth in us. The fact that we don't relate with Spike and wanting to be self-destructive. Yeah. As opposed to if he asked me when I was 20, I'd be like, Spike's so cool. And he is cool. I don't want to be that kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, Spike is 27 at the point in the series.
Oh, what a... No, thank you.
And, you know, it's I think a little nod to the 27 Club, where it's all these, like, very famous, very talented musicians end up dying at the age 27. So it feels like a little nod to that in a degree.
I mean, he's just asleep, but
yes, he's just asleep. He's just sleeping.
He's in a farm in upstate Mars,
upstate Tharsis.
But we're gonna have a wrap up episode, a post mortem for sure. But yeah, this show's been in my life and has affected me consciously and subconsciously for like 20 years, you know?
Yeah, like, I got to meet, I've probably mentioned this already, but I got to meet Steve Bloom once at Katsucon in Maryland. And when I met him, I got him to sign one of my DVD collections of Cowboy Bebop, and I got a photo with him. But I told him that, like, it's an honor to meet you. You have been a part of my life for almost 20 years now. Because, like, I think probably the first time I ever heard him was Toonami. And then from there, it was, like, Cowboy Bebop and Big O and a bunch of other stuff. But, like, having that person and having this show in my life for almost, like, 20 years now is kind of mind-blowing. And the way that we've come back to it now for this show, like, I've come back to Cowboy Bebop several times. But coming back to it for the show, it feels very strange, kind of enlightening to see which characters I actually relate to now. And the fact that it's mostly Jet is kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a time where it's like, yeah, I want to be Spike. I want to be cool and do martial arts and have big floofy hair. And now it's like, nah, I want to be Jet and just be kind of a mildly sad old man.
Yeah. I'd love to cook more.
Oh, yeah. I'm painting miniatures now. This is my little bonsai farm.
Jet goes to movies. He knows how to fix spaceships. I that'd be great.
Yeah.
At the same time,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how's the end of the show, man. You know, I don't know what the ending is if this doesn't hit. Like, I guess I would want it to now. It's still like, no, this is. What else would they do? I can't think I can't think of it.
Yeah, no, I think you might be able to move some things around, change up a few small details, but I think ultimately, yeah, this is kind of the way it has to end. It has to end with Spike and Vicious, and yeah, like I don't know any other way to really end the show.
One of my favorite scenes is in part two, where Faye and Jet are talking, and it's real weird because rarely do they just talk, they and them, unless it's Faye trying to steal money from him, stealing his pants. It's both of them sort of poking at each other to try and get the other one to admit that they should go and help Spike.
Yeah.
And it's such a, but neither of them wanting to admit.
Yeah.
And neither of them wanting to, like, take the initiative, because again, it's the everyone in the show has like their armor,
mm-hmm.
and it's getting chipped away slowly. As we said, Spike has his aloofness. Jet has a different form of aloofness. He's very bad at it, not caring.
Yeah, he is very, as the kids say, tsundere. Go on, go do what you want. It's not like I care. He's got a much more sort of confrontational attitude about the whole thing.
Faye runs away. That's mm-hmm. her thing until she can't. And even Ed is just like, well, you're just fucking goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns into not goofy until that doesn't work with like, well, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
But yeah, these two episodes are just like, let's really strip these characters down.
Yeah. And, you know, there's all sorts of like little callbacks. Like the last meal we see Spike eat is bell peppers and beef without any beef.
Yeah. Yeah. Jet's just beaming when he's serving the food.
Uh-huh.
He loves it.
They have their little heart to heart. They get to tell another sort of obtuse story about that's really just about what's going on with them. Like there's bits and pieces that I really like. I think I do personally kind of I like the episode, but I don't think it rates super super high on my list. You know, I think we've kind of talked about how a lot of the Spike Vicious plotline episodes aren't, you know, they aren't as interesting as a bunch of the other ones. And I think that's, like we've said, just kind of due to the fact that they're fairly straightforward and they're not really going for anything other than this particular sort of plotline, as opposed to, you know, something like Mushroom Samba or Puro LeFou, where they're very stylized and very outlandish in their way. But I definitely do. I still like the end of the series. It's just, you know, it doesn't have quite as hard of an impact as it used to.
As an individual episode, Hard Luck Woman hits harder. Haha.
Mm-hmm.
Where this is still individually, it's not as strong. But when taken for the series, it's like, no, this is the end. This is the way they did it. And this is the way they kind of had to do it. It's what they set up. I know. My instinct is like, okay, so what about the whole series as a whole? I'm like, uh-huh. Nope, that's next time. You got one more from us.
Yep, you get one more. One more from us on this. How do you feel about learning about Mars?
We just heard Wind on Mars, so I'm...
Well, yeah, that's right.
As of this recording. But yeah, we're going to live there one day, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah, totally. 2071. We're coming, mm-hmm. baby. So the city featured in this episode is called Tharsis City. And Tharsis is actually a region on Mars. It's an incredibly large volcanic plateau near the equator in the western hemisphere of Mars. It is home to the largest volcanoes in the solar system. The tallest volcano on the planet, Olympus Mons, which is also the tallest mountain and volcano in the known solar system, is located off the sort of northwestern edge of the plateau. And between the actual plateau and Olympus Mons are three volcanoes. Arcea Mons, Pavanus Mons, and Asclepius. Boy, that's three vowels in a row. Asclepius Mons, who are collectively known as the Tharsis Mons. And they're all volcanoes. Like, it's entirely all volcanoes. And these are shield volcanoes, which are named for their shape, which takes the shape of a shield if it was laying on the ground. So they have sort of a fairly low, like, curvature. They're not like a Mount Fuji, which has that very sort of typical volcano mountainous kind of point to it. They are much more rounded. Presumably, this is where the city of Tharsis City is placed. It's placed somewhere in the Tharsis Plateau. A lot of the times in the series, we see the city's placed in like craters. So it's probably either in like a crater or a caldera, which is sort of the crater of a volcano. When you think of like a cartoon volcano where, you know, all the lava and stuff comes out of, that would be the caldera. And then something I learned that I don't think we really talked about when we talked about Alba City in the movie is that to the north of the Tharsis Mons and Olympus Mons, there's another volcano called Alba Mons, which is an incredibly unique volcano formation, and the fact that it is incredibly wide but very low slope. The steepest flank has like a 0.5 degree grade, which is very, very, very low. It's actually five times lower than the other slopes in the Tharsis volcanoes. And it's almost like a large bruise or welt on the planet's surface. It's so like wide and kind of flat when compared to the other volcanoes. So that is actually probably where Alba City actually gets its name. It's probably built somewhere in that region, which makes a lot more sense. It's really neat how they kind of took known regions of Mars and just kind of like, yeah, here would be a city, here would be a city. I think getting to see, you know, where these cities were definitely kind of adds some verisimilitude to the overall series, to kind of see like, oh, this is where this place would be. And yeah, like if you wanted to get up to Alba City, it'd just be like a drive or a fly across Mars.
Even to the end, here's all this detail. I mean, that's a beginning thing. That's the beginning of production, kind of figuring it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is cool that they're like, they didn't just, again, like they normally do, they don't just slapdash things into the show.
Mm-hmm.
Dead volcanoes, right?
Yes. As far as we are aware, I don't think Mars is particularly tectonically active.
I guess okay, yeah.
I'm not seeing anything about it being active. I am learning about the plate tectonics of Mars, and that it apparently does not actually have any, which allows for the volcanoes to become as big as they are.
Well, that would explain the welt, like shape of them. But.
Yeah, like Alba Mons its span is about as large as the United States.
Oh, good.
It is gigantic. when we talk about the size of these things, these are like, yeah, like you said, continental sized structures. The Tharsis region is actually sort of over a what would be considered a hot spot where the sort of crust is a lot thinner, not too dissimilar from Hawaii where it's at, because the Hawaiian island chain, they're all just old volcanoes or active volcanoes in some degree. And basically there's an eruption that forms an island, and then over millions and millions of years, the plate tectonics shift and basically just move the island off of the hot spot so that when it erupts again, it creates another island. That's basically how all of that works. Mm. That's why we get that chain. This is just stuff that no one knows. The actual Hawaiian island chain goes way, way out and will eventually just run into Japan one day.
Oh, cool. Like in a couple hundred million years?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I think, Midway and Kurei Islands are all a part of the Hawaiian island chain. Like, they're all just the older versions of the islands that we see today, pretty much. They just, over time and through movement, they have just kind of disintegrated into what they are now.
Man, huh, yeah, volcanoes.
Volcanoes, yeah.
We live on them.
Mm-hmm. We certainly do. If you live in the western part of the United States, you are living on top of a volcano.
Mars, a land of contrast.
Yes.
Nice. My last note is that Vicious's bird done blew up. To save him, and that was wild.
Yeah, like that whole scene is pretty out there. Like, I know we've talked about how his bird is like some sort of weird cormorant type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, apparently it's also full of bombs.
Just wild. Again, I don't think any animals have died before in the show that weren't food related. I don't think you saw animals die.
Yeah, no.
All bets are off.
Vicious's bird has always reminded me of a Fearow from Pokemon. It has that same look. Like, it has the long swan-like neck with the long beak and the very sort of, like, squat, round body. Like, I don't know if what sort of bird they're really basing it off of, other than, like, a cormorant kind of bird, but that just feels weird.
Yeah, we talked about it before, but, it's a cormorant, and there's various religious allusions to it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, if you need a refresher, go back to that.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't remember. It's I just want those downloads.
Yes. Also, my edgy heart has never forgotten the line from Vicious, "And you will shed tears of scarlet."
Like, it's good.
It's a good line. It's so I could feel the pure edge on that one.
Yeah, it's again like that. The in part one, the air battle, again, one of the best ones in the series. It's insane. It's all insane.
The air battle with I think it's the Road West. Yeah, Road to the West, where it's just got this very 90s like saxophone over the whole thing. I recently watched Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, this is the 90s loves its like brass and woodwind instruments over action scene.
A good end.
A good end. Even if it doesn't resonate quite as hard anymore, it's still a good end to the series.
So this is a final movie recommendation. I kind of didn't think I was going to have one for this, but I found my thread, and it's sort of a movie we've circled around before, but didn't dig deep into. So a lot of the imagery, of course, I have to mention that, it's very John Woo inspired. I've not watched this, but supposedly a lot of it comes from A Better Tomorrow 2. Which is a 1987 film, and of course the sequel to A Better Tomorrow.
Of course.
And I mean, you get a little Lin Shin comparison, because apparently Chow Yun Fat's character in the first A Better Tomorrow was so popular that he was cast as a new character, the twin brother of his previous character named Mark.
All right, sure.
So there's that. I need to check this out. But what I'll actually talk about, since we're dealing with the changing of the guard within organized crime, I thought it was a good excuse to talk about The Raid 2 Barrendal, which Barrendal... Which Barrendal means thug or gangster. I believe in Japanese. It's not Indonesian. But this is also a sequel. It's the 2014 sequel to the Indonesian martial arts film, The Raid Redemption. The Raid 2 is written, directed, and edited by Gareth Evans. Not Gareth Edwards of Rogue One fame. I know those dudes get mixed up sometimes. It stars, forgive me on these pronunciations, but Iko Uwais? It's Iko.
I believe so.
Who was super underused in The Force Awakens.
Boy.
Side tangent. I was so excited when I heard that they were in it. And then they just die.
I was so upset that they get nothing after I... How could you not just make them the Knights of Ren and have them be all cool and flipping around and... kicking ass. How could you not? It's right there.
That's the thing. It's just like, I get it. You want to put him in a Star Wars, and it's always cool to be in a Star Wars, but there's a better part for them.
Yes.
Back on The Raid, which kicks ass and does not overutilizes, I'd say. Erefin Putra, Oka Antara, Tio Pakusadeo, and Yayan Ruin, who was also underutilized in The Force Awakens, but kicked ass in John Wick 3 Parabellum.
Yes.
As he was a mini boss.
Yes. Yayan Ruhien, speaking of the Lin Shin thing, also appeared in The Raid as a different character. And he shows up in The Raid 2 as a different character.
As like a kind of good guy.
A kind of good guy, but equally badass. Like, he's basically the final boss of The Raid 1 and then comes back in the second one as just a different guy.
Yeah, so The Raid 2 kicks off pretty much right after the first Raid and sort of changes genres, and there's a reason for that, where the first Raid is about storming a drug den and is very influenced by John Carpenter in Assault on Precinct 13, where they have to climb. They got to climb a tower and get to the boss at top. Very simple, where this one turns into more of a crime drama / martial arts film. Aiko reprises his role as Rama, who turns into an undercover cop who is supposed to be sent to prison for only a few months, but ends up spending 2 years there to get in with the mob, which he does. And then it's a thing of like, where do the loyalties lie? You're undercover, but you're also doing all these things. It kicks ass. It's just a bitchin' martial arts movie.
It is one of the best martial arts movies in like the past decade. It is so good. Oh, I might have to watch that tonight.
I know. Last night when I was doing these notes, I was getting enamored with clips. I'm like, no, I can't. I have to write things down. The movie features Indonesian martial art called Pencak Silat, which is not, it's a general term for a various different forms of related martial arts within there, because there's strikes, there's grapples, and there's also weapon usage. So a bunch of different things covered in that. And kind of the reason why the movie takes a bit of a turn as far as like structure, because you would think, oh, it's a movie, they're just going to go into another building, you know? That's in sort of an easy way. But apparently he had the script in 2009 as a standalone movie, which Edwards failed to get funding for. But then once the first Raid movie found acclaim, he then retrofitted that into a sequel. It just kicks ass. It's such a good martial arts movie. I was so lucky. I didn't have to travel too far to see it, thankfully, but I did get to watch it in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner at the time hated it because she felt stressed out the entire time.
Mm.
Which is fair because, yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Not only is it just, like, good martial arts and, like, respecting how to show fight scenes and fight choreography, really understanding... what you need and what it takes. I will say Evans is also super good at building tension.
Mm-hmm.
There is one fight that takes place in a muddy prison yard, and it's a good 2 minutes of silently without dialogue, setting up the stakes of that fight and just cranking up the tension, getting you ready. Cause you know, a fight scene's coming. It's a martial arts movie. And getting you ready for it. And I think that's really his talent that he's got down packed. It's the setup for the fight and then the fight itself. Because in a lot of martial arts movies, like even like a John Wick, where it's which are super good action movies, they're very much like, oh, we're in this now. Now we fight. We suddenly fight. Where both Raid movies are very much like, no, we're going to dig. We're going to twist the knife just a little more before we give you the release of the action scene. There's characters called Hammer Girl and Baseball Batman.
Uh-huh.
And they do what they say on the tin.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's no plan for a third movie, this movie does not end in a cliffhanger.
No.
But it definitely ends, again, much like Cowboy Bebop, a little open. You don't quite know the exact fate of Aiko. But as of 2016, according to Evans, there's no plan for a sequel. I believe he's come out with, like, he put out a horror movie that was straight to Netflix, I believe, called The Covenant, which wasn't that great. Like, I didn't finish it, and I was, I think he's doing some UK TV show, which rules, but I think it's like, get that VPN out if you want to watch it.
I'm just thinking, like, the opening, I think, like, the opening fight scene is, or, like, the first fight scene we get to is literally just Rama is just in a bathroom stall as, like, everybody in the prison is out to get him. Like, they are all outside the door, and it's, like, a full, like, floor-to-ceiling door. And they're just all, like, banging on it. And he's just in there, like, getting ready to fight every person in this prison. It is heart-pounding. And then every fight after that is just top-notch. There's, like, an excellent, like, car chase scene in the film. Like one of the last fights happens in, like, a hotel kitchen. And it is one of the most amazing, technical, tension-filled fight scenes I have ever watched. It is so good.
Yeah, there. The car chase scene. There are dudes. There are cameramen dressed as seats in the car.
Yes.
To accomplish some of the insane camera work they do. But yeah, his the Netflix movie was Apostle from 2018, which, again, like I said, I didn't finish. I feel like I might need to give it another chance. I mean, it's not an action movie. It's like this weird slow burn horror. But he does get back into the action world with the show Gangs of London. Just check out some of the action scenes there online. Like I said, VPN for that guy.
Yeah. I do actually, the Raid 1, going back to that for just a second.
I mean, yeah, of course, watch that, duh.
Yes. Please. But one of the characters, Jaka, who is the sergeant, is played by Joe Taslim, who is the new Sub-Zero in the new Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, we can talk about the Mortal Kombat movie after recording. Because that is a hell of a cast. The Raid 2 is incredible. Like, top three action movies of all time, probably.
At the turn of the decade, people were doing, like, people on Twitter were doing their top 10 movies, and I believe that made my list for the 2010s. Because it's, yeah, talking about it now, it's like, I guess I got to watch it. If nothing, at least put it on the background. If you, if you haven't, do yourself a favor.
Go watch both of them, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, they're both incredible action movies. But yeah, The Raid 2 is, like, it's much more complex, like you're saying. It's very much more about, like, it's about kick-ass martial artists that are also gangsters.
Yeah, in dealing with that world.
Yeah.
And also being undercover cops. And how, yeah. But that's the last movie. I mean, end it with a, I mean, speaking of ending with a bang, for the last movie recommendation.
So, that has been, that's been Cowboy Bebop, folks. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be back in 2 weeks with a post-mortem. We'll be talking about sort of our feelings on the series as a whole. I think we've decided to do sort of another top 10. Each of us pick 5, probably?
Maybe, yeah, I think so. We're still figuring out what it's going to be.
Yeah. We'll talk about our overall feelings on the series. We'll kind of do anything that we kind of missed. We'll do that. So come back in 2 weeks for that episode. If you want to get at us, you can email us at thinkingtoohardpod@gmail.com. Send us an email. Let us know how we're doing, what you think. If you got any bits we might have missed, any opinions, you want to tell us how we're wrong about something, go right ahead. You can also tweet at us at thinkinganime on Twitter. We would love it if you would go onto whatever podcasting service you're using to listen to this on, and rate and review us if possible. It really helps us out, lets us know if we're doing bad, good, okay, and helps us move up and down in the charts. Hopefully, upwards. And then you can find me online on Twitter at Kamen Otaku. That's K-A-M-E-N-O-T-A-K-U. You can also find me on Twitch. I'm at twitch.tv/Kamen Otaku. Again, K-A-M-E-N-O-T-A-K-U. And I'm also on some role-playing game podcasts and streams, such as The Best Power Brigade, the Technical Difficulties Gaming Podcast, the Role-Playing Exchange, and Role-Playing Public Radio. Aaron.
People, hello. if you want to listen to me not talk about Cowboy Bebop and not be as serious, you can listen to Kame House Party, the show where myself and Vince White try to go through every episode of Dragon Ball, and then we make dumb jokes about it and do improv. I think once this is released, we will be live with our Patreon. If you enjoy that show or this show, if you enjoy me, I'll say that. If you enjoy me in any capacity, you can go over to patreon.com/Kame House Party to support us. If you can, completely unnecessary, but it's super appreciated, if you do. And I also stream on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. On twitch.tv/Kame House Party.
Excellent. So like I said, we will be back in 2 weeks with our wrap-up postmortem on Cowboy Bebop. But until then, I've been Noah Carden.
And I've been Aaron J. Shelton.
And we've been Thinking Too Hard.